Today, you'll hear part two of Voodoo Concerns, a 9-day motorcycle trip through Haiti. If you haven't listened to part one yet, go back to last week and listen to that first.
Hola, amigos. This is Don Alejandro de la Vega. Welcome to Tropical Paradise Waits. Do you ever dream of living in paradise? Dream no more, my friend. If you are planning on living in the tropics, or if you are a full-on expat, this show is the show for you. Listen and learn how to make the best of your leisure time. It takes more than a plane ticket to fully enjoy the tranquil lifestyle. It is a state of mind. Let's live a better life. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Positive reviews help us rise up the ranks. Please scroll down and click support this podcast. Gracias, and enjoy the show.
Today we'll continue with Voodoo Concerns, a 9-day motorcycle adventure through the rough Haitian terrain. We left off last week with Seth and Glenn unwillingly rolling into the big, nasty city of Port-au-Prince. This is part two, so if you haven't listened to the first part, backtrack a week and listen to part one. Do you want to live your life in paradise? Sure you do. Listen and discover Tropical Paradise Waits for You. Hey folks, download the Anchor mobile app and search Tropical Paradise Waits. Then tap voice message, send message. I really want to hear from you. You tired of paying those high cable and TV bills? Get a shitload of live channels, including movies and theaters, news and sports from your hometown or anywhere in the world. For one-time fee with no monthly payments, mention Tropical Paradise Waits and get $20 off a fully loaded Fire Stick. Go to don'tpayfortv.com, DONTPAYFORTV.com. Welcome to the beginning. This is Franco in Studio B and from the seat of my pants in beautiful downtown Cabarete. I'm back here with Glenn and Seth, and they're going to continue to talk about their adventures with their Haitian motorcycle trip and maybe some more. Hey, guys, how you doing this week?
Hey, what's up, Frank?
How you doing?
Yeah, where'd we leave off anyways? This was...
Well, we'd been on the Haitian Riviera,
right.
And the good folks at the Red Door Guest House had pretty much warned us, do not go into the capital. They had been there. Their vehicle gets accosted, shaken, gangs of thugs kind of shake it down for money. There's been a rash of kidnappings. We knew there was some uneasiness around the prime minister resigning a few weeks earlier. Haiti's a rough place, and it was probably good advice. But as I think you and I agreed, all roads lead to Port-au-Prince, and we were...
I don't know how we came to that agreement. I think, you know, there might have been a little bit of back and forth on that before we just came down on the idea that Port-au-Prince was going to be in our future. But before we did that, you know, just backing up, this whole trip idea, the reason there was only two of us on that trip, I think it's because it was such a unknown to both of us. I didn't want to ride with anybody that was hadn't ridden with before, and also didn't know real well, and we've known each other for years, so I was pretty convinced that whatever problems we had on the trail, us getting along or having disagreements about what the trip was, wasn't going to be one of the complications. So that, I mean, that was important going in. And you had the same bike too, which is I think not an insignificant point. Like our spares match up. We have Enduro 250s, which are you know, basically go anywhere bikes, and we didn't know what to expect. So that was, I think, the right equipment to have. And also the Chinesium 250s that we're riding, despite their many flaws and problems that they have, the huge advantage is parts are accessible basically everywhere in both countries.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. I was most concerned about moto issues. I wasn't as worried about culture and the language, you know, obviously intrepidation about the safety concerns. And
this was not your first international trip, was it?
No, sir. but it's the first one in many long years. And I knew Seth was the right guy to do it with. We've been talking about it for a couple of years on and off. And but the bikes, man, they performed admirably. Like, so huge shout out to, I guess, Toro, and that's Seth's 250 and my Virga, which I think is just a Toro rebranded. Because remember when I bought it 2 years ago, we went for a little ride to Encuentro.
Yeah.
We sat down, we did it like a visual, and we're like, do you realize every single bolt, every wire, every cable, every point of everything was identical, and the only thing different is the decals.
Yeah, it was super helpful. Definitely, it made planning and preparing a lot easier. And I had some confidence just that we were going to be able to get what we needed if you hadn't already packed it.
Notwithstanding a clutch cable that was a foot too short. So yes, you're welcome once again.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So
I think the bikes actually were key for this next part of the story, because going into that city, we sat there that night. It started the night we got into that Red Door, actually. We're sitting there having, what was that horrible beer they served us?
Oh, it wasn't Prestige. Shout out to Prestige, best beer.
Yeah, definitely better than the beer here.
Brahma.
And they come in the little brown stubbies, too, which was quite nostalgic.
That's rough stuff. That's like crazy European rot gut.
Yeah. Anyway, they started leaning into us heavy that night, and we had both decided, you know, we're going to get as close as we can and then just decide. Hopefully we'll get some local intelligence. And it came to us by way of these missionaries. And they explained to us that, having lived there for a few years, they just don't go to Port-au-Prince, period. And they were on this, remember they were talking about that WhatsApp group?
What's up?
Yeah. And the reason they just text each other in their community where the roadblocks are going to be or where the problems are in Port-au-Prince real time. They couldn't even really tell us where to go or where not to go, because they said it's just such a fluid changing thing, depending on who's doing what, who's pissed off, who's dropping a roadblock, who's doing the kidnapping that week. Everything, the landscape changes there. So this was not super positive.
Yeah. Well, I know it's, you start to look on the map and, you know, a couple of stubborn guys, and we're thinking, you know, we'd have to backtrack a few hours up the road to make a beeline across to one of the mid-country border crossings. But, you know, we kind of reflected on it and realized things are always overstated. And we felt pretty good about, I think we had our A game going in terms of our navigation and our riding skills, and the bikes were performing beautifully. And we decided to go for it.
We did spend about 2 hours before that, though, trying to come up with some alternative route, and it just didn't exist. I mean, it was literally a bottleneck. It's like, without backtracking and going back the way we came 3 deep days into this adventure, then we just had to go through the city. It was unbelievable. There's just no way around it.
Yeah. I tried to explain that to my wife, Sheila. I know what I promised. Haiti, yes, it's going to be good, but we're going to...
Don't worry. Yeah. We won't go near Port-au-Prince.
But, you know, I'll just say it's logistics and a bit of confidence, I guess, combined to day four. We decided to go into Port-au-Prince. And I don't mind saying that, full props to Seth, who, you know, navigational expert, sailboat captain extraordinaire. He took over navigation. We had a little game plan. Intel-wise, you know, Carter, who was a Haitian fellow we met that night at the Red Door, he really did spend...
Thank God we met that guy. Oh, could you imagine if he didn't show up? What another lucky circuit.
Down that road number one into the roadblocks of yeah. the gangs. I mean, you know, we're looking at the waterfront on a map going, hey, you know...
This is the biggest, most direct-looking road. That's got to be fast and safe if we want to blow through this town.
It's usually the touristy safe area, right? But no, apparently that whole area is controlled by gangs, and there really is limited, if any, police... in the city. They're not visible, not like Dominican Republic, huge presence of safety here, but in Haiti, it's a different story. And
the limited amount of cops there actually are in the country do not even go into this area. They can't. It's not a, it's just a complete no-go zone. And it was our plan to just go right through it.
So we spent an hour with Carter. Thank you, Carter. And picked some real good bypass roads to sort of skirt around counter or clockwise into the city. We had a street with two hotels picked out. And, you know, Seth rigged up a way that we could stop in 30 seconds or less, take a check on our points, make decisions. I sat behind him with, well, I have to admit, a finger on the trigger of some bear. But
Glenn ran security.
Yeah, how about that? The big guys on navigation, the little guys on security. But it worked, and we only stopped about half a dozen times. We probably got off course once or twice coming into the city.
Because there's no signage, there's no lights, there's no nothing. I mean, it's. I remember, you know, I will probably always remember that moment. As we're going along that east-west road up at the top before you drop down into Port-au-Prince proper on the route that we had picked, we kind of slowly rolled past the turn, knowing that was the turn, but proceeded about 100 meters up the road. Stopped over and made sure that actually was the road that was, you know, we did not want to make a mistake on our first turn. So we sat there, confirmed, yep, it was definitely the road. Before we started the bikes up, helmets were off, kind of looked at each other and went, so we really doing this?
One thing we did agree on other than proceeding was that it felt a bit like that scene in Black Hawk Down. When the Marines are all geared up, kitted up, they've got their plan A, plan B, they're in communications, and they're going in to extract their brethren from Mogadishu, where the helicopters have crashed. And as the crowds got thicker, as there's a couple roadblocks, it just kind of felt like that movie. And you know, there's no going back, but I think we handled it well.
Right? Do you remember that what they said though before we went in the night before?
Live or die, live or die, live or die.
Yeah, that. If there's a roadblock, turn around, drive fast in the opposite direction. So, I don't know, I'm not 200 meters down that first road. Roadblock. And we would slow to a crawl and start weaving. You didn't want to stop because that looks, just stands out. So we slow to a crawl, but continue weaving through traffic just to get a little closer to the obstruction to see what's going on. Cause we need to decide like real time while rolling, whether this is something we had to abort or do you just go faster and blow through it? So get a little closer and, you know, you see through the cars and little gaps. Now there's definitely something across the road up there. Okay. Move a little closer. Oh, there's a guy with a gun. A little closer. I think that's maybe a uniform, a little closer, just go. We weaved around, there was a bus, we weaved around to the right-hand side onto the shoulder and actually used that bus as like a running shield.
As a decoy,
and rode in the ditch as the bus was rolling, so we were invisible to the road, came up the other side, looked back, and was like, yeah, no, it was a roadblock, but I think it was a legit one because we were approaching that gang area and the local law enforcement, I don't know if it was military, police, whatever, but they seemed to have quite a bit more of an aggressive take on the traffic there. Maybe knowing they couldn't go into the area, they were just trying to control traffic in and out. Not sure.
And it's always hard to tell really who the police are sometimes. They're not the best kitted up police force. But yeah, the decoy move is beautiful. You get a slow-moving bus or rig, and you just go opposite to it to where the police are.
That was not an unknown maneuver to you, was it?
No, it's one that's near and dear to my heart. You want to hear a little bit about it? Sure.
Why not?
Well, when my wife Sheila and I were coming up through a poor part of Argentina, we knew that the police were always constantly pulling over tourists and anybody with money and fleecing them, and they do these rolling slow roadblocks through each of the three provinces north of Buenos Aires. And you know, that's the deal. You follow a bus. And when they wave you over to, you know, basically fleece you, you just wave back and kind of use the big truck as a decoy. And Sheila and I had done that 3 days beautifully heading up to Brazil. And then one day we got caught with no decoy. And the police came out and tried to stop us. And we blasted through the roadblock. Sorry, Mom. I know I never told you this, but... you know, and we were just hoping they didn't have a squad car or radios, and we blasted through, and well, the next province sent their police after us, and they did have a squad car, and they pulled us over and they hauled us into a police station and interrogated us a bit. It was all good, and Sheila pulled some wizardry with her charm and good looks, and we got out of it. But
we didn't really have that option available to us on this trip. We didn't have charm or good looks.
Neither. We had neither of those.
Yeah. We had ignorance.
Well, yeah. So, but the rolling decoy trick, it works. So anyway, we get into the city and it's starting to look a bit like The Walking Dead, to be honest. I mean, you know, again, Haiti, Port-au-Prince, they've been through a many tough years. We all know that. It's poor. It's corrupt. The earthquake of 2010.
When was? Oh yeah, 2010.
Yeah, 2010. I mean, it's just apparently it's never been the same.
It looks like it could have happened yesterday, though.
Yeah, there's not a lot of what we'd call public works there. Like decades of garbage built up on streets. Everything's kind of brown and gray. Or is that just my camera that did that?
A little bit of both. That was Glenn is famous for his Olympus camera. Got some stunning imagery of this trip.
Well, it sort of grays things down if you want to, yeah, so you can focus on the content and not the iPhone-esque colors.
What really kind of stressed me out a little bit at that early stages of dropping into Port-au-Prince was the amount of black liquid on the roads, and it hadn't rained. It hadn't rained for like a week, so I knew this was not some kind of standing pool of water. It was bubbling up and smelled very bad.
And God bless those Haitian women, right? Because it's
always they were sweeping it.
They're sweeping it. They're sweeping up black slimy filth and garbage and organizing it in a pile in the middle of the intersections. So the good news,
they were probably creating a roadblock.
Well, pretty much. They somehow through 2 foot high piles of filth, they have absolutely created pedestrian only streets that really shouldn't be, but cars can't fit past the garbage. Bikes can, pedestrians can. And I think that's why we ended up in that damn market once again. Not as tight as before, but
wow.
A market is never good because it's just chaos and it's everyone doing
humanity just pressing up against you. I mean, that actually, yeah, now man, I forgot about that. That was stressful.
It was. And it wasn't on our route, I don't think. You tell me.
Well, it was on our route because we were there. I don't know if it was on our planned route.
No, that's what I mean. It was. But, you know, your throttle's your best friend, and any time it looked ugly, and let's face it, we think we saw a purse snatching just ahead of us. We saw a few people running full pin just in front of us.
My biggest concern at that point was, I mean, I was confident in our ability to elude and basically ride anywhere through the vehicles or up on the sidewalk if we had to, and we did. But what I was really worried about was any kind. I just think it was a very thin margin between, hey, this is going great, and having a really bad day. I mean, if at any point we had bumped into somebody knocked us over, had a mechanical issue with the bike stopping, would have been, catastrophic, I think, because it happened a couple of times when cars came together and we had to momentarily slow down. I mean, people were just suddenly pressing up against you. And I could just see that turning south.
Yeah, there was a few of those moments for sure.
Yeah.
But then magically, we are, after I guess an hour and a half of slogging through the apocalypse of Walking Dead, we ended up on a fairly nice street. And Seth's like, we're close to the hotel. And wouldn't you know it, there's two cops pull us over and they're on the hotel road now asking us for documentations. We got to open up our gear. And Seth pulls an audible and goes, hey, we're staying right there, man. That's a hotel. Wink, wink. We hadn't arrived yet, but we were trying to stay there. Anyway.
It was the only play I had. I just kept saying it over and over and over again. And they kept saying, papers, 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 papers. It was like, we're staying there.
Well, once we were behind those,
those
security walls and we got a room and frosty mugs of beer, prestige beer, really delicious beer.
How happy were you to see those 18 foot high metal gates slam shut behind us? Oh man,
I was happier when the beer arrived. And yeah. The best tasting beer I've ever had, probably the coldest as well.
Yeah, that was very, very interesting. Not something I would probably repeat very soon.
And for about 30 seconds, or maybe that I'll say the length of the first beer, we talked about just sitting back and enjoying the pool. I mean, it really was a nice hotel, it was a former Holiday Inn. and dignitaries and you know, business people would stay there. So we treated ourselves to.
It was expensive. I mean, relative to relative to what we had been staying in, but well worth it just to have the peace of mind and sleep well. That's for sure. And I mean, the security was fantastic.
By comparison, I guess, yeah, with the bunk beds at the at the Red Door Inn were
the missionary
awesome.
Hostel.
The missionary folks, it was $25 a night. That was cool. We'd stayed in a $5 back in DR actually is when things started getting really, really cheap accommodation wise. $5 a night, $10 a night.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was cool. But anyway, so you know, it's only 3 p.m. We're gonna go out and explore. So explore we did on foot. And
after leaving absolutely everything we had in a secure place, like I was feeling okay at that point to go walking around as long as I didn't have anything on me. I never at any point got the feeling that somebody was out to do me harm. I shouldn't say at any point, but generally. But I definitely had the spidey senses going about.
Truth be told,
you're not going to walk around with money in your pocket. I mean,
I was thinking about harming you though, because let's be honest, though, Seth's like, we got to go out and catch this voodoo market. It's this voodoo market. We're going to buy some stuff. We're going to get some skulls and some dolls, and it's also called the metal market or something, and they do voodoo stuff.
the metal. That's right. The metal.
Totally had the intel wrong. We went to this voodoo market, which has turned out to be
the metal market. I was looking for this. Okay, a little bit of background. This didn't just come out of nowhere. I definitely knew about this guy who was famous for making some kind of voodoo art out of metal. And lo and behold, you see on this, I don't know where I came up with that, but there's this place called the metal market. And it's like, well, it's definitely it. Like, let's go.
That was my bad intel. I think it was a bad Google search pointed us there. And it was a little antiquated. It was just basically a market, right? I mean, it's buy stuff. We didn't need any medicinal potions. We didn't need any chickens, goats. We didn't need any big metal pots. We didn't need a...
You bought a flag, though.
I bought a flag, yeah. So it was all good. I collect flags from everywhere I've been. So thank you. That was good.
But we wandered around that stupid thing for like an hour looking for this voodoo, famous voodoo art guy, asking for the metal guy. And of course, if you ask any question whatsoever, there's 10 people that are happy to answer it in any way, whether or not it's related to your question or not, and grab onto you and start leading you around. So it was not trivial to try and navigate our way to this non-existent voodoo guy. But eventually we did figure out, we put two and two together and figured out why it was called the metal market.
We were sitting, we'd pretty much given up, walk back to Hotel District and sitting at a bar called Hotties. No, it wasn't.
No, but the metal market, remember.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Why is it the metal market?
Right, we got some intel.
It's built out of metal. It's just a market.
Oh, that's right.
It burnt down like 5 years ago, so they used metal posts. And finally, we got this guy who's like, look, I know where the metal market guy you're looking for is. Cool. And we follow him around, and he's like walking up to these posts and knocking on them with his hand, explaining to us it's metal.
It was the only building in the market area that was actually had a standing roof with a metal post holding it up. So that was the metal market.
Fail.
It was a bit of a fail. So we were regrouping over a cold one in a bar called Hotties, which is not a strip club, just a neighborhood bar. And something struck us that, wait a second, maybe the voodoo market is for real and we had it wrong. And so we decided to hop two up on a moto concho.
I was definitely good to just hang out there and drink beer. I don't know how you came upon this. I figured it out. Eureka moment. I was somehow not present or ignoring you for that part. But suddenly you were just hell-bent on going and finally... I'd given up on the concept completely.
Well, it worked though, right? I mean, here's the best part. We got one driver. We got one big guy, 6'5", Lenny, on the back of the bike. So he's number three, and he's security. He's got the bear spray.
I rode bitch on that one.
He did. He's doing the left-right shoulder checks, and the little guy is in the middle working Google Maps like he's never worked it. And I'm directing Moto Concho guy where to go. There's a few false starts. Let's face it, it wasn't the best laid-out city map that Google has to offer, but that's what we had. And we ended up, no word of a lie, at the most amazing workshop / art gallery of a man named Eugene. He's a legitimate, internationally renowned voodoo artist. He's done shows in New York, London, Paris, and he has built thousands and thousands of voodoo metal sculptures, dolls. he integrates
out of garbage. This stuff is built out of garbage. It's like license plates and weird tires and discarded toys
and human skulls.
And yes, and real human skulls. Real, right? Human skulls.
So Eugene goes to the local cemetery, digs up human skulls, and uses them in his art. And so he's got like an Osama bin Laden sculpture that I think he does bad things to.
That place was a trip.
It was a trip. But do you think at dark, when nobody's there, he actually does some voodoo stuff to some of those sculptures? Because
he showed us his. I mean, it was clear when we were walking around the part where the art was available for sale. But he showed us his little voodoo closet thing. Remember
where he lives?
No, not that. He had that little shrine area, and there was like I don't know, some incense and candles, and then that weird. And he said, "This is my real bit where I do the voodoo."
And the great thing is, he lives, it's in, you know, it's like, you know, it's a 2-3 separate little hovels connected by a dirty alley, and you get up on the third floor and you look out and it's all just rusty corrugated metal. People have got tires, rocks, junk holding the corrugated metal roofs
down
from the wind and the rain. And there's the kids just playing soccer in a field that I think he helped build. So this guy has contributed back to his neighborhood big time. And he employs a lot of these kids to gather up all these pieces and I think help assemble them. Because I'm telling, several thousand, 3,000, 4,000, or 5,000 works that even if they took a day or two each would have been several lifetimes of an artist to build. And there it was. Just went on forever. You could have walked around that place for 3-4 hours.
Some of the stuff in that room, though, I mean, not some of the stuff, almost all of it, it's just weird. Like, I don't know anything about voodoo, but it seems to be heavily centered around baby parts and giant phallic dicks. Like
the baby nailed to the cross, missing a leg, bleeding, was a bit disturbing. But I asked him about it, and he said it was a homage to the children lost in the 2010 earthquake.
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it was, but there was a lot of baby stuff going on there, and like babies with four legs, and it's just strange. And I asked him, it's all pretty negative. Like, I mean, you look around, it does not give you a cheery feeling. And so I'm trying to get some information about voodoo out of this guy. Like, is there anything good about voodoo, or is it all just, you know, the general sort of feeling about voodoo is that it's negative, like you do this to hurt people, right? And he said, no, there's positive stuff, like, you
what
know,
are
like,
your voodoo concerns?
What are your voodoo concerns? Yeah, he said, if I was, for example, arrested and was going to court, I could potentially come and talk to him about doing some voodoo on the judge in order to get a favorable decision. I was like,
as long as it's not, I guess it's not evil.
Positive to me. I'm not sure how the judge would feel about that. I don't think that was a good example of positive voodoo.
There must be some. I know. I
is there white voodoo?
I don't know.
Is it all black?
Well,
dark?
The guy back up in Malo, remember the original Voodoo Concerns guy? He wouldn't refer to it as black magic. He just referred to it as magic, right?
Right.
Assuming it's all dark. Not black in the skin sense, of course, but in the darkness of being evil, not good. But yes, Eugene definitely said there was some good come out of it.
Maybe if you had some kind of health problem, you could have him do some voodoo on the germs or the disease.
Let's go back.
Voodoo the cancer out of you or something.
Yeah. But anyway, so as twilight set in on Eugene's house of horrors, our beloved Moto Concho guy circled back, thankfully. And
he wanted like thousands of dollars for this stuff.
Oh, I forgot. That's right. Seth was going to buy one of the voodoo sculptures.
Yeah, well, even that little thing, it was like, it had to be something small enough to fit on the bike to get it back. He wanted like $200 or something. It was a little wooden carving. Anyway.
I didn't want to, you know, I'm the last one to pass judgment on art, but I'm just saying I'm glad you didn't take that one away. But, you know, in hindsight, you know, Method John, John's Method Lodge here in Kite Beach, drop in sometime. He really wishes we picked him up.
Yeah, he was disappointed we didn't bring a skull back for him. I don't know if we would have got that across the border.
Yeah, I remember customs.
And honestly, I felt a little weird about taking a skull that's been desecrated from somebody's grave and wandering off like it's a souvenir.
Yeah, true enough. But anyway, so we got back to the hotel, safe and sound, And we realized that the day following was going to be the day of, except in reverse. And we stuck to our plan. And
I actually didn't realize that, Glenn. For some reason, I had it in my head that it was just going to be easy getting out.
And at some point, I said to you over a frosty beer, hey, this is going to be tricky, right? And so we got organized again with the maps. We're going to go here, 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 north of the airport, circle back, blah, 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 blah. No, no, no. That area is supposed to be gang controlled. It's cut up here. And maybe next episode, Seth, you can talk about how we went down. Supposedly, it was supposed to be the street out, and there was a street lamp they had knocked
out,
blocking the damn street, and we had to do an audible.
That was the next morning after the voodoo dude?
That was the next day.
Voodoo dude.
We got to talk about that next week, though.
Voodoo dude. All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Frank.
Thanks again, guys. I look forward to next week for part 3. Mark it on your calendar. Mark it in your phone. Don't forget to listen to the show. We launch every Sunday. You're stuck in the middle with me. Don't miss next Sunday's conclusion of Voodoo Concerns. Greg and Seth make it back safe, or do they? Trouble in paradise? I don't know. Listen next Sunday and find out. If you're still with us, something kept you. If you like what you're hearing, help us by spreading the word. Send a link to all your contacts and Facebook friends. Ask them to follow us, subscribe, then leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That's the only way we will rise up the ranks. If you don't do it, nobody will. Send yourself a reminder for every Sunday. Add us to your Sunday routine. Download one of my favorite podcasts, This American Life. Give the dog a bath, watch 60 Minutes, have spaghetti for dinner, take your mom to church, and listen to the new Tropical Paradise Waits. Tap follow us, then scroll down and click support this podcast. If you're listening on a treadmill, walking, running, ice skating, kite surfing, rock climbing, cleaning your house, walking your dog, good accomplishment. If you just sat and listened, you may have wasted a perfectly good hour listening to shit you have no interest in. So meet me halfway. Share your thoughts. Download the Anchor mobile app. Search Tropical Paradise Waits. Tap voice message. Send this message. We want to hear from you. Or email me direct, all lowercase, francogringo13@gmail.com. Visit us on Facebook, facebook.com/ Tropical Paradise Waits. Tropical Paradise Waits is presented by Elusive Media. As you know, we're not licensed to use public music, so this gives us the opportunity to go out with local undiscovered talent. And it gives you the opportunity to discover it. Staying with the Haitian theme, please enjoy the talent of Mimi Mewa, Rudy Rudeboy. Listen live uninterrupted after the credits. Till next week, au revoir.
Today's credits are as follows. Thank you to our program director,
Don Alejandro de la Vega.
Our editor and fact checker,
they'll never know.
Our chairperson,
Wilma Buttfit.
Fleet managers,
Lisa Carr.
Our charm consultant today is
the always charming Miss Inga Tooth.
Tiki Bar reviews by
Hassan Ben Sober.
Our favorite divorce attorney,
Carmine, not yours.
Our credit counselor is
Max Stout.
And our fashion designer today,
Shujas.
And of course, our download counter,
Adam Ilion.
If you enjoyed the show, help us continue by scrolling down and clicking support for this podcast.
Oh, na 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 na, Lord have mercy. Blood, 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 and bacana.
stepping on the beat again. Instagram follow, su Facebook follow, su Twitter follow, VMAP otande, Kadabai follow, Valle Kwan follow, Valle Gris follow, VMAP otande, Makabo Mangela, Jumnamal Kusa, Makabo Mangela, Jumnamal Kusa, Makabo Mangela, Jumnamal Kusa. Mimi,
Mimi, yow,
Mimi, Mimi,
Mimi, yow,
Mimi,
Mimi, yow,
Mimi, Mimi,
Mimi,
téléphone, modem laptop, modem machine, modem l'argent, il est mal au bablé, embrasser, ouais, ou payer millier, ouais, bablé affiché, ouais. Ou appeler des blasés, ouais. Ou pas un petit menti, je t'aime. Ou m'en blâter pour ATM. Ou m'en m'appeler et t'es femme. Et l'on sorti pour être qu'elle, baby. Chérie, moi yo, baby. Chérie, moi yo. Ouch! Maman! Samba qui tout coup. Instagram follow, sur Facebook follow, sur Twitter follow, VMAP otande, Kadabai follow, Valle Kwan follow, Valle Gris follow, VMAP otande, Makabo Mangela, Jumnamal Kusa, Makabo Mangela, Jumnamal Kusa, Makabo Mangela, Jumnamal Kusa. Modem téléphone, modem laptop, modem machine, modem l'argent. Les coucher avec ou bando, ou gagner pambo yon combo, ou pas chambler ou béjambo. Manger l'argent chambo, faut béjambo. Ou pas besoin d'inquiéter, ou pas là pour m'embêter. C'est ça moi marqué, ma hymne dans soleil, moi c'est l'autre qu'on a pégé. Moi pas j'en avais un bec, comme moi chante cocorico. Moi pas j'en avais un bec, comme moi chante cocorico. Autant qu'on va plus voir décaler moun, on toujours besoin à décaler moun. Pour une machine pour réclamer une crasse, toi qu'à l'époque sans pas épaler youn. Mimi,
Mimi,
Mimi, Mimi,
Mimi,
Mimi,
Mimi,
Mimi, Mimi,
Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi, Mimi